I wouldn't say I woke up one day with some crazy vision. And I think that's how all companies are started. And the best entrepreneurs I talk to, it's the same thing. It's kind of this incremental, usually solving your own problem kind of thing, where you keep unveiling more and more data as you peel back the onion and get smarter about what you're trying to do and eventually build a business around it.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. John Oringer is considered New York's first tech billionaire. He's best known as the founder of Shutterstock, a stock photography content provider that today is publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange. What I really love about John, aside from the fact that we grew up in the same town, is that before Shutterstock, he actually had started over 10 companies. I love the fact that he's a serial entrepreneur with both successes and failures. I admire how he just keeps pushing ahead with new ideas and new companies, whether they succeed or fail. To me, that is truly inspirational. The fact that he doesn't fear failure and he just keeps on creating. Shutterstock itself was actually born in 2003 out of John's own need for affordable marketing content for a previous business. He launched it out of his one-bedroom apartment in New York City, and he even kickstarted it with his own collection of 30,000 photographs. In all 16 years of Shutterstock and all of its successes, the one I know John is most proud of is the $1 billion it has earned for the company's contributor community. It's amazing to think about how those dollars have affected the lives and communities of over 1 million creators around the world who provide the millions of images, videos, and music tracks to Shutterstock every month. These contributors embody the original passion John had when he started the business, making content available to everyone, everywhere. So, it's no surprise. I was super excited to sit down with John on site at the New York Stock Exchange just weeks prior to COVID. I wanted to talk to him about that drive and passion to just start companies, and of course, about the incredible business of Shutterstock. So, I started the conversation by asking John about this lifelong desire to one day start a company that would be listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, I was starting software companies in the 90s, and I was selling these small applications, things that bothered me. I would try to figure out solutions for. They were small. They were like pop-up blockers, personal firewalls, privacy protection types of software. Even people were concerned about privacy and cookies even back then. So it would keep track of tracking pixels and stuff like that. And all of these software products were small. They were hundreds of thousands to small, single-digit millions of revenue per year. They didn't last very long. Eventually, I would run into competition from some bigger guys. And I kept looking for something to build that would be bigger than that. I eventually, through that process, kind of became a jack of all kind of trades when to starting a software company. So I would program the software, create the UX around it. I was customer service. I was dealing with the payment processors.
I was doing everything.
But the one thing that I knew drove the product and drove the revenue directly was my marketing. And to market, I needed images, and they were really hard to find. And so I started shooting some of them myself. I started to buy them. I started to kind of deal with that part of the industry. And it was very difficult. And so as those products started to slow, I started to put the images I was shooting on a website. And I kind of said it was a subscription product. I was just kind of an extra thing on the side. You know, it was like $9 a month, all you can download of my images. I had some information about how they performed in the market, which was starting to become interesting as well. And so what happened was that business became bigger than all the others combined very quickly.
Right, because, you know, I understand before Shutterstock, which obviously a New York Stock Exchange listed company, before that, you started, I think the number was 10 different businesses.
Yeah. They were all these small kind of one-off kind of solution-based, looking for problems to solve that I had businesses. They were all their own separate businesses, and they all, some of them worked, some of them didn't. I would kind of cycle through them and try to figure out what worked and what didn't. And one was an online dating app. One
was a good idea at the time,
yeah,
right?
Turns out those do well. One was a kind of online legal services firm.
Another one that
LegalZoom kind of went with that. But when I started to realize that there was this, what we call MarTech kind of thing going on today, back then, you need images. You need images that perform. You need a lot of images.
Yeah.
You don't want to negotiate kind of where those images are going to come up around the world. Once all that started to become clear to me, that seemed like the business that would work. And the numbers became clear in the analytics as well.
So did you just have a vision or an idea of just how important images were going to be in the future, especially with everything going on in technology and how everything was changing?
Yeah, I don't think I had the vision before I realized it as my own issue. And then as the customers started to come in and buy them, I started to see who the customers were. They were agency names I recognized. They were company names I recognized. So I wouldn't say I woke up one day with some crazy vision.
Right.
And I think that's how all companies are started. And the best entrepreneurs I talk to, it's the same thing. It's kind of this incremental, usually solving your own problem kind of thing, where you keep unveiling more and more data as you peel back the onion and get smarter about what you're trying to do and eventually build a business around it.
Yeah. So with Shutterstock and going back to those early days, you know, we talked to a lot of entrepreneurs and it's really interesting because, like, for yourself, having a business that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange and people know you, see you now, a lot of people are like, whoa, everything must have been successful. Everything just probably went well. Everything, you know, was just peaches and cream. But take me back to the early days. Were there times you ever thought like, hey, this might not work or this might not be as big as what it's become?
Yeah, there were several times along the way where we had to make tough decisions and we didn't quite know how they would go. I mean, if you go all the way back to the beginning of the business, we sell a product today where you can download as many images as you want. And if you download every single image in your plan, we will not make money from that subscription. So in 2003, there weren't many online subscriptions. There wasn't much data around what LTV looks like.
Right.
Most of the planet was not on a cellular device or even on the internet. And it was a bit of a risk, right? It's hard to go back from that decision. It's hard to go back from an unlimited subscription to one that's more limited. At the time, we had this 25 a day cap because we just tried to protect ourselves
right,
a little bit.
Yeah,
but if someone came back every day,
I actually remember that.
We would be negative on their subscription. And we took a bet on that and we said, people are going to be more engaged if they use more. Some days we'll lose, some days we'll make money, but we're going to figure out how to make it work. And we did. And you move other levers to make it happen along the way. And it happened. There was the time when we had a single data center in downtown Manhattan and Sandy hit.
Oh, God.
Yeah. There are always moments where you think, is that the last day?
What was that like when Sandy hit? And do you recall kind of like, did you have any fear prior to the hurricane coming, or was it just like, oh my God, this is hitting kind of dead center where like our data center is?
Yeah. I mean, you always have the intention to be resilient and disaster proof and multi-location with everything you do and have backups everywhere and have those backups be able to produce the live environment again, you know, in a limited amount of time. But then you're always faced with growth decisions at the same time. And so balancing those out are very hard, and pressure from your investors to continue to grow fast sometimes take away from the resiliency piece. So while we did have protections in place, I don't know. I mean, did we think that there was a chance that all of Manhattan below 34th Street could lose power? There are several other big companies out there that had the same issue that, you know, were in business for decades longer than we were. But yeah, there are scary moments along the way. But you get through them, and we're a lot stronger today because of them.
Yeah. Do you recall a time in the history Shutterstock where it was kind of a key defining moment, or maybe that you felt this, whoa, I've got something here? And my ultimate goal of getting a company or having a company listed on the New York Stock Exchange is going to be real?
Yeah, I think it was probably around 2009 or so. It was probably around the 100 million revenue mark when when I started to realize that could be the case. It was always a dream. I didn't know if it was actually going to happen. Look, we could be private and be just as successful, and we could have gone that route, but we were building our enterprise business. We wanted to make sure that clients understood how big we were. And if we were going to start to tell people more about the business and start to reveal some more metrics and data and around revenue and profitability, then why not just be public? Let's get all the benefits of being public as well, which where our employees can kind of understand where the company is at any time and get liquidity when they need to. And, you know, there are downsides to being public, but there are also amazing benefits to it as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask in terms of that, because you guys, I believe, went public 2012.
Yeah.
And so now it's been, which is kind of crazy already, what, 8 years?
Yep.
Are there any days you think, and like you said, there's pros and cons both ways, but are there days where you say, hey, you know, maybe if we were private, it would be a different story, or we would have been more successful, we would have been less successful?
It's a give and take. There are distractions both ways. Being public can be painful at times. Being private can also.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there are employees that we get that are very strong that want to work at public companies.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we would have gotten some of those if we were private, but then at the same time, every quarter can produce some noise.
Yeah.
And there's overhead to kind of constantly explaining to employees what's going on, why something may be completely out of our control in the world and it
right.
affects us.
Right.
As a private company, the thing is, those things are affecting you too. You just don't see them
right.
every minute.
Right.
But suddenly, there's a metric out there you can watch every second of the day. It can become a distraction, but it's also, on the other hand, a great way of creating discipline, right? Every quarter, you need to produce this this report, and your investors are going to see it. And it's a drumbeat inside the company where we're being held accountable, and it's very visible. And I like that transparency as well sometimes. Sometimes it's hard, but
yeah.
You know, overall, it's been great.
Yeah, no, I mean, and just for our listeners, before we started, we're taping upstairs, but before we started taping, we got to go down onto the floor. And that was my first time on the floor of the exchange. And there's just this is an iconic building. This is an incredible place. And how does that for you? Because telling our listeners, we went down there and they had all the Shutterstock logos and the market maker of Shutterstock was it like when you walk in and see that, like, what's that feeling like?
Yeah, it's cool. I actually worked on a business before that involved programmatic trading back in 1999, 2000. And so I was always familiar with the floor and how markets worked. But yeah, the day we rang the bell and went public, it was a pretty cool experience to then be on the other side and be one of the listed companies.
Yeah, what that day, can you recall? I guess now it's already 8 years, but it's such a moment. It must be in one's life because everyone every day, you know, so many people who watch, you know, all the different networks are watching that, the bell ring and the opening or the closing. And like, do you remember kind of what was happening that day and what were you thinking going up there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time ago right now, but it was an amazing feeling. I felt like we were being put on the map in a different way, but at the same time, there were new expectations of us. So it was a mixed feeling, and I think it's worked out well. We're still learning new things every day, and we're still building the company. It's gone through several phases. 16 years in, it's a different company than it was even 8 years ago. But being public, having that public currency, it's going to continue to help us grow, and we'll continue to use it.
Has there been a time you've ever looked back and thought, I mean, Shutterstock has been so incredibly successful, but has there been a time you've looked back and from those ideas you kind of named at the beginning of the show, a few of them are major businesses now. Has there been a time you've thought like, hey, you know, it would have been cool to do the dating site or the LegalZoom idea, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I like to think if whichever direction we picked would have been successful, but it's hard to go back. And I like the business that we're in. I think it's amazing to work with creatives every day. We sell to 2 million businesses that rely on us. We sell 6 images a second.
Wait, 2 million? Wow.
Close to 2 million businesses buy from us, 1 million contributors in 100 countries around the world. So it's a pretty cool thing. It's a marketplace. I guess dating apps are marketplaces also.
Yeah, it's true.
But it's a two-sided marketplace. And there's a network effect in there as well, which is pretty important. And we've gotten pretty good at building it. And today we continue to evolve the workflows so that customers stay on our platform longer. And there's still a lot to do, but there's a lot of opportunity
there
to build the business.
Were you a photographer? Was that a passion?
I liked photography. I was an engineer. I was a programmer at first. Been programming since I was a kid, since I found that Apple IIe.
In third grade. That was amazing. I started, I think, with the TSR-80.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was like the best thing you could do is like we figured out how to like get your name to like print out like 10 times on the screen. And that was like the program. Unfortunately, that was the extent of my programming knowledge. But Apple IIe, I remember playing so many games on Apple IIe. And so was that your first kind of inspiration to be a programmer?
Yeah, well, actually, we had TRS-80 in my house.
Yeah.
That was probably actually the first. But the Apple IIe had, it was where you can go from BASIC to Pascal and actually start to build some cool stuff. But yeah, it was always fascinating to me that this device could kind of be a multiplier on what you can do as a human. So that was always interesting to me.
Yeah. So were you more like myself? I remember playing a lot of games on Apple IIe. Were you more doing like some decent, like your own programming and building things?
I got distracted by the games also All sometimes, right. but yeah, I was sometimes decompiling the games as well.
That's pretty cool. So the other thing, like you said, Shutterstock, it's a marketplace, and you have made a lot of photographers a lot of money, which has to be really fulfilling, because you can tell me what the number is, but I was kind of blown away that, wow, this isn't just, you know, a business where you're taking money. This is a business you are actually earning or affording photographers who a lot of times are not paid, you know, they're independents and a lot of them. But what is the number and how's that feel?
Yeah, so we recently announced that we've paid out $1 billion to our photographers over the years. And it's something I'm really proud of. It's pretty amazing because the people that are on our platform selling their photography, they didn't have that outlet before. And so there are businesses that have been created on our platform. There are areas of the world that it would have been impossible to sell your images before we existed, can now use our platform to do that. And it's cool. It's cool from a global point of view as well. 60% of our revenue comes from outside the U.S.
Wow.
So that actually drives our content producers to produce content from all around the world as well, because there are local needs for businesses everywhere. And so I think it's hard to measure the impact that those dollars have had on the communities around the people as well who are generating that revenue. It's cool to see.
Yeah. Have you gotten notes over the years or emails that were from faraway places and just like really kind of just...
Yeah, we talk to contributors all the time from all over the world that they're making life-changing amounts of money because of our platform. And that's really fulfilling. And today, a lot of CEOs talk about making their business more mission-driven.
Sure.
I think our model has that built in, which is cool. We don't have to figure out a way to do that outside the business model. I mean, there are ways we give back, but the model itself, as it gets bigger and bigger, gives back more and more to the creatives of the world.
Yeah, it's just probably an incredible network effect of just more and more dollars, and especially photographers and that area business, because it's very hard to monetize. So I would imagine too that it's pretty diverse, the photographers. Is that a big part of your mission as well? Diversity?
Yeah. We are contributors, like I said, they come from 100 countries around the world. A lot of our creatives are outside the US. And yeah, we're gonna continue to make sure that our employee base, our contributor base, our consumer base is as diverse as possible.
So nowadays, Shutterstock, as we talked about, 16 years in, 8 years, New York Stock Exchange listed business. Is your day-to-day, what is your day-to-day like, maybe in comparison to when you were first getting going?
Yeah, and it changes every year, changes every month. But recently, the team is about, now that we're 1,200 people or so, it's impossible to be in the weeds on every single thing. I can say I use the site every single day, which I think is important.
Are you downloading pictures? Are you just for your own personal
needs? I'm always using it. I'm using it to, I'm acting like a customer. I'm using it to, as I think through ideas, I use it to ideate on certain things. I use it to experience our customer features that we're launching, that we're ramping up or that we're testing out. I'm always in there. But at the same time, I'm not I'm not in every detail about what we're releasing from our product organization, for instance, or what we're thinking about or what's on the slate to come out next quarter or the year after that. I've taken more of a larger strategic kind of role, as you have to, as companies get bigger and bigger.
Yeah. And was that hard for you? I mean, I think what holds back a lot of entrepreneurs from really building much bigger businesses is the control issue, wanting to control things. Was that an issue for you? Did you have to work on that? Because you got to where you have to be at a point now where you can't be in that control.
Yeah. I mean, over time, what you start to realize is if you start to exert a certain type of control, it's counterproductive. And all entrepreneurs will learn that as their company gets bigger. And you want your company to be as productive as possible. So look, I mean, I found a bug the other day on the site and I brought it to the person that runs UX and I showed it to her. I'm still going to do that. But
what does she say when you bring that to her? Like, is it like, oh shoot, John's calling, like, shit, I'm in trouble. Like, or what is her, that's pretty cool that like you're there, you're involved.
Well, they just tell me it's going to get fixed,
right?
which is basically all I want to hear. And at this point, I don't want to know how or why. And I know we're getting better and better at this stuff. And I know I have a different eye for the site. I mean, not all of these issues are going to be picked up by
you're probably the biggest user of the site and have seen it from the first day. Like now, like you said, you go on it every day. I mean, that's like probably one of, if not the most stable thing in your life over the last 16 years.
Yeah, it probably is actually. You're right. And yeah, I probably look at it from a different perspective. So I understand that. But at the same time, I think as a founder, as an entrepreneur, I think it's important to stay close to that kind of level of detail, but then also be able to zoom out as far as I need to look at how the industry is changing in the next 5 years. Where should we be to be and how should we innovate to make sure that we're on top of how things are going to evolve.
Yeah. How is the industry changing?
So it's interesting. It's changing in the way that we thought in a lot of ways, in that photography is getting easier and easier to create. The supply side has exploded. With an iPhone 11, you can create amazing shots that it used to take a digital SLR to take. And we've even solved the issues where now we can digitally do things that you would need optics to do before, like creating background blur, shallow depth of field and bokeh. And, we've been talking about that. As long as you know the distance, you can recreate artificial depth of field. And that's what creates focus in an image on a specific topic. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so that a camera that's as flat as our phone can act like a big camera that used to have a mirror that slapped back and forth and a lens that was 6 inches long, right? So we all talked about that happening. It's here now. And that means that you can create professional photos anywhere in the world and your phone will guide you in the way to do that. And even if you don't do it, it'll have a little button that lets you adjust it to that after in post-production. And it's pretty amazing. That's created just an insane amount of content. The thing that we have to continue to make sure our customers understand is that model releases are important. Cleared photography is important. If you're a business, you still need to pay for a license to use that image. And our customers understand that. And there are some customers that are customers today because maybe a few years ago they didn't understand that and they actually got sued.
Exactly. And I think that's how probably I imagine people then realize, and hopefully people are more and more educated about that and using images because there is an IP holder, there is a rights holder, and if you're going to use it, you have to pay for it.
Yeah. I mean, intellectual property is still important, and people will always, there'll be some people that will give things away, but there'll be people that want to get charged for the quality, the clearance, and the safety of a certain type of image.
Yeah. How about China? Are you guys involved? And I know with some of the censorship and issues there with IP, are you guys actively doing a lot of business there?
Yeah, China is obviously a complicated place to do business. Yeah. Anyone who does business there will tell you that. We have a partner there, Zcool. We own a part of Zcool. We made an investment back in 2015 about, and they distribute our photography. They help us with the market. And we also have our own site that's available in China. Doing business in China is not easy.
Yeah.
But we made the decision to be in the market many, many years ago, and we're going to continue to be there.
More from our guest,
But first, a word from our sponsors.
When you own a business, having people you can trust makes all the difference. The same goes for your bank. With U.S. Bank, you work closely with dedicated business bankers who get to know you and your business. And with their years of experience and financial expertise, you can trust you'll get valuable solutions for your business. We all need people we can trust and ask for guidance. And with U.S. Bank, you're never on your own. Schedule an appointment with the business banker at usbank.com/book. Equal Housing Lender Member FDIC.
And our next sponsor. How Success Happens is brought to you by JustWorks. JustWorks is here to support the small business superheroes working hard to protect their companies and take care of their teams. With simple software and expert support for payroll, benefits, compliance, and HR, JustWorks takes some of the guesswork out of running a business in good times and bad. They know small business leaders wear many hats, and they're here to help you do it all. With JustWorks, you get seamless tools for managing remote teams and navigating new legislation. This includes scheduling, tracking, and staying compliant with new leave requirements from day one. They're available round the clock for you and your team. Call, Slack, chat, text, or email them. JustWorks is here for those who do it all. Learn more at justworks.com/success. That's justworks.com/success. And we're back. I'm just curious, this came to mind, a certain image that's like the most downloaded image, or would that be a surprise, or what is it?
The most downloaded images are the most boring images, right? They're the images that they're the vectors, they're the illustrations you need for your mobile app, right? They're the perfect kind of vector you need for your UX team. It's the really clear handshake photo in the boardroom. And look, people need those images, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's the person answering the call for your contact us page. These are the things businesses need.
Right.
And we have lots of them. And we have every possible person on the planet doing them. And they're all cleared and ready to use. And there's a big spectrum of imagery that's used on our site. And the most interesting stuff is, you can find our creative trends report every year, which just came out for 2020. And you can see kind of how we use our data to show people what's trending at the time.
That's interesting. How does that work? Because I would have, now thinking about it, you probably have so much incredible data.
Yeah, data is an important asset for us, an important part of the platform, an important thing that we're going to continue to leverage and create our product around, actually, or create our platform around. And yeah, I mean, we've been collecting it for 16 years. We have a lot of information about how images are purchased from different businesses, and we're also going to be able to figure out how they perform, and how to make them more performant for our customers.
How about video? Is that something, I mean, in terms of where things are going, is that something you guys plan to get involved with? Are you involved with? What's your ideas there?
Yeah, we launched our video marketplace probably back in 2007 or 8 or so. And so we've been building that ever since. We were one of the first marketplaces for video. And it's an important asset type for us. And I mean, we could all see the movie studios today and how much their budgets are and the massive amounts of money they're spending to constantly generate content for the consumer platforms. That's all driving the usage trends for us, and it's pretty amazing to see. And we see our video clips be used in some of the most popular shows out there, actually.
Is that cool when you're like, can you pick it out when you're like watching a show and be like, that's from our site?
I can't always pick it out because I mean, they're allowed to modify it, and you know, it's a lot cheaper to take something, kind of tweak it a bit and put it in a show than to actually go shoot it. But we know House of Cards uses our footage and several other Netflix shows as well. I always watch credits these days.
Yeah.
Because I'll see the Shutterstock.
That's cool.
Brand name in the credits, and it's cool to see that as well.
Yeah, totally. Thinking back and thinking to when you started this, I know you had this aspiration to become a New York Stock Exchange listed business. Did you ever realize how big this has become and really how big it could even grow to at this point?
Well, yeah. I mean, when we were tens of millions of revenue, kind of getting to that 100, then I looked at the market and we saw a $6-7 billion addressable market. Today we're 600 something million of revenue. We've been profitable every year. So yeah, could I have seen a $1 billion valuation? Yeah. And as we were headed towards the IPO, we knew it wasn't going to be far from.
Was that pretty cool too, when the $1 billion valuation?
Yeah, yeah. It happened soon after we went public, right, which was cool. But yeah, just a number.
Yeah.
Now we, there's always another number after it.
Right. It's like a treadmill, I guess. Can't get off. So what
shouldn't get off.
Yeah, exactly. For you now, moving forward with the business, and you kind of talked about your day-to-day, what's your personal plan? Is this something you're still really enjoying? I know you're on the site, like you said, every day, so I guess you're involved. But like, do you see for yourself here a real long-term vision?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I see, just as I talked about before, your roles change, and it's important to make sure that you're always doing the thing that makes sense. Today, my role, I have 4 direct reports, and what I do every day is try to make myself available for the bigger strategic decisions while also making sure I can hand off as much as possible and make myself as redundant as possible to open up that space to continue to think about the industry and the world and how we're going to play in the different spaces we're in and how we're going to adapt to the market as it changes. That's the most important part. If you can do that, you can do it forever.
Yeah. What about nowadays? I mean, like you said, you started 10 other businesses before Shutterstock. You must have come up with countless great ideas in the last 16 years. What do you do with those when they come up now?
Well, some of them we tried inside Shutterstock. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to do some of those in a bigger company. Sometimes I write them down on a list. I have a pretty long list right now. And it could be at some point in the future, there's something else we do inside Shutterstock. I make investments outside Shutterstock. I could continue to do that. It's probably more important for me to find the person to run the next idea, if there was something I was really serious about, and go from there, which I think is a possibility.
What type of businesses, in terms of investing and looking at for yourself and being this entrepreneur, knowing what it takes to succeed, what type of businesses do you look to? And do you look more to the business? Is it the founder? What's the key ingredient for you to get involved with the business?
Yeah, I look for network effects. I look for strong founders. All the investments I've made in businesses, you can see the founder has that look in the eye where they're on a mission. Yep. And they will run through a wall to get there. And I remember that feeling when you're 40 people kind of in a space, outgrowing it, gluing things to the wall to make sure that your network in the office works. And that's the kind of stuff I look for. Scrappy,
yeah.
Scrappy, efficient, just kind of someone that they'll do anything to make it happen.
Yeah, no, as from a personal standpoint, that was, you know, for me in building 2 small businesses that we've sold, like, it was just that desire, hunger, and investing in other businesses. You're really looking at that founder, but you said it's a look in the eye. For me, it's been very hard to find those folks, or betting on maybe the wrong folks or not, you know, sometimes. But I guess, have you been successful at that and finding the right people?
I feel like I have. We'll see. Over the years, there's been some investments I've made that worked out, some that didn't. But I think, you know, once you meet a couple, they tend to hang out in the same circles.
Yeah.
And you meet a bunch of others. And lately, I've been meeting some of them. So we'll see.
No, that's great. And in terms for yourself and moving forward with the business and how it's growing, what are the big challenges that kind of, I know people ask the question, keep you up at night right now? Are there still those types of things that keep you up at night at this stage of the business?
Yeah, there's always been, and there will always be. If there aren't, then something's probably wrong. But look, the world's changing very fast. Like I said before, there's more and more content getting created. For us, it's about how do we continue to make people productive with that content. And that's how we need to evolve. And that's how we're building the team. And that's how we're making sure that we think strategically to make that kind of transition happen.
Yeah. I would imagine just with technology and like you talked about the iPhone and the ability to be able to just, even photographers like myself who are horrible. And like, it was interesting because when we were on the floor before we took a picture and they had a professional photographer and then I handed her my iPhone. I'm very curious to see the difference in the quality of picture. But with that said, in technology, is that something also that you guys keep your pulse on and assist with? I mean, you know so much about photography. I imagine like it'd be smart if an Apple or whoever's making photos is asking you guys, you know, what works and what doesn't work. Do you guys get involved on that end or have thought about that?
Yeah, we talk to all the big companies. They're very interested in our data and how we can help. I mean, it's pretty amazing if you look at Apple looks at your behavior and they know that, you know, if you created a live photo, they know which frame is the most important because you chose it.
Yeah.
And then they know,
oh, yeah,
they know what an important frame is to the next person,
right,
to auto choose it. And so that data is really valuable, and we're training our devices to get smarter and smarter every day. And that's kind of how we see the Shutterstock platform as well. Six images sold every single second. There's a lot of data there to make the next
six
customer.
Every second.
Yeah, six every second.
Wow.
Six paid downloads per second. Those are each a data point to make the next search and download more successful.
And are you able, is that a difficult process nowadays to take that data and then actually be able to use that data to make the site better, more usable?
Oh, yeah.
Is that
That's
one of the hardest things?
It's hard. It's expensive. It took an investment, which we made in our platform, which we're starting to take advantage of. But it's definitely important. Yeah. And it's vital. I mean, businesses that don't do that will not exist.
Yeah. So in the time we have left and in wrapping up, I'm very curious because you strike me as someone who is an entrepreneur, owner, must have been, and I still get the sense you're like 24/7, like I love like gritty, but like outside of that, are you able to, and tell me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong, but I have really gut feeling that's the type of person you are. Outside of the business, are there things you do now just to, you know, they're so important with wellness and health and getting older, and are there the things that you do to kind of make sure that you're still productive? I know a lot of our listeners are always kind of looking for that balance.
Yeah, I do that too. I mean, I'm the kind of person, I can't go to a gym.
Right.
I hate the gym. I don't know what to do in there. If I get a trainer, I hate the trainer.
Right.
So the one thing I figured out is tennis.
Ah.
For like an hour straight, you can't really do much else.
Yeah.
It's a mental exercise. It's a physical exercise. If you get the right pro, you gain a lot by the end of the hour. There aren't much things. There aren't many activities that are like that. I mean,
yeah,
you can go skiing. You can be on your phone on the
totally
chairlift on the
yeah
way up.
Yeah.
Like, there's just like, if you are playing tennis, there's nothing else you can do. So I try to do that now. I'm trying to once, twice a week do it.
Yeah.
I'd like to do it more. I don't always get to that rate, but I feel like that creates the right balance. Yeah. I mean, that and, you know, 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah. No, I'm same way in terms of wellness and health and making sure. And I think with tennis, I still play a little basketball. It's the same thing. You're kind of, it's a real meditation because it seems like to me, it's a place where you go to, you're focused on hitting the ball. So you're not focused on Shutterstock.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
It's a
you can't think about anything else. The second you do, it gets too frustrating. So you,
right.
Yeah.
So in wrapping up here, and I'll just ask you this last, because it's such a big part of your story with New York Stock Exchange coming back in here today. What's that feeling like? And we're greeted by the people here who treat you very nicely. They even put out a little donuts for us, some water. You got the VIP treatment, but for you, and what was that feeling like today? Just coming back and walking on the floor.
It's always great to come back here. We like being a New York Stock Exchange listed company, and it's great to come back here. We were even just talking about having our next board meeting here. They have some cool rooms that we can use as well.
Yeah, in the room we're sitting in right now, they have all these old like stock certificates and I saw something from Alexander Hamilton downstairs in the lobby, like one of the first machines. Also, it's an incredible history, and like you said, it must be an incredible feeling to know that your company's part of the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, it's great.
So thanks so much for joining
Thank you.
Me. Yeah, it was great. Thanks, John. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's R-O-B-E-R-T-T-U-C-H-M-A-N, or even send me a message on LinkedIn.
How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuckman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.